Hi, everyone. I'm Ryan Durge, coming to you from the HTL studio in Toronto. And joining me today is Sam Corbett. That's how you know you belong. You belong. You belong. You belong. As a founding member of the Sheepdogs, Sam has contributed to the award-winning sound of the band for close to two decades, going from his basement in Saskatoon to the cover of Rolling Stone. And now, after a battle with cancer, he's coming out on top with a brand new project and album called Nutana. Please welcome to the show, Sam Corbett. Hi, Sam.
Hey, Ryan. Thanks for having me. That's a very kind intro. Thank you.
Oh, thanks. I mean, it's true. Like, do you ever look back on that and say, wow, like, I've been in music for almost 20 years now, maybe even longer?
It's kind of crazy. It's almost hard to think about. Like, at the time of the Rolling Stone contest, it was hard to get a lot of perspective of what was happening to my life. And so I thought, like, well, maybe ask me in like 10 years how I feel about it. But now that it's been 12 years, I can't really remember a lot of it in like super clear detail. Yeah. Or it just seems like another lifetime to me. So yeah, it's sometimes I sit back and reflect, but it's harder than you might think.
I mean, that cover, you were the first unsigned act to actually be on the cover of Rolling Stone, which I thought was pretty neat. Do you have that framed somewhere in your place?
I do have one here, yeah. It's first and only. I think that once they ran the contest, they realized that maybe it was not something they necessarily wanted to be doing with the magazine.
Okay.
So they had, I know they had a second contest where you got to be on the back cover, obviously not quite as prestigious.
No.
but, you know, I think that, you know, we met Jan Werner, who's like was the owner of Rolling Stone. I think he sold it now, but I think he liked us, and he was happy that somebody with like a classic throwback rock vibe had won the contest. But maybe they realized that like that wasn't something they wanted to do, or at least they never did it again. So,
well, I mean, now you're the first and only. So I think
exactly, adds, even better. Yeah,
yeah, it adds
kinda,
to it.
Yeah, it kind of emphasizes what a once in a lifetime opportunity it was too. So.
Yeah. And since then, you've just been going up from there. And I have listened to the new album, Nutana, and I'm a big fan. Thank you for sending through the advanced listen. I was wondering, you know, how would you describe the sound visually? If you had to describe like a scene out of a movie or a TV show or something to the music of this album, how would you describe that?
Well, that is a great question I haven't thought about before. You know, usually when I have to get asked to describe the sound, I think it's, you know, somewhat like Sheepdog stuff, maybe a little bit more singer-songwritery or introspective, basically meaning it had some more acoustic guitars or something on it, although it does have some electric. You know, it's sort of, in a lot of ways, it's the soundtrack to a particular period of time in my life where in 2018, I was diagnosed with testicular cancer, and my wife was 4 months pregnant at the time. And I had to cancel out of some Sheepdogs tours and shows to have my surgery and my treatment and stuff. And so it was a very dynamic, you know, period of time in my life. A lot going on, a lot to think about. And during that time, I wrote a lot of the songs that are on the album. So it's sort of the soundtrack to, you know, if you want to think of a visual thing, think of me sitting at home and, you know, I just come back from getting my radiation treatment and I'm trying to figure out what to do.
Wow. Thank you for sharing that. And it's interesting because you wouldn't necessarily on a lot of the tracks really piece those two things together because there's such an upbeat vibe to a lot of it. I would describe some of it as a summery, you know, chill vibe. I mean, my favorite song is That Would Be All. If you could take the broke down fool, well, that would be all I'd want you to do. I'd want you to do. I'd want you to do. I love that song, the harmonies and the guitar. And I hope that that is one of the singles, because I'm obsessed with that song listening to the album. But you wouldn't necessarily pair what you were going through with that music. Were you writing from a place of just remaining optimistic and positive and, you know, to help you get through that journey?
Sometimes, like that particular song, I'd written quite a few years before I had cancer. And it just been kind of kicking around. But the lyrics, you know, they are kind of about, you know, maybe somebody who's trying to get a second chance with their romantic partner. I'm fortunate enough that that's not really an issue in my personal life. I have been with my wife for a long time. And so, you know, but the lyrics are relatively vague. So maybe they could be about someone who's just trying to get a second chance at anything in life, like maybe, you know, trying to recover from a illness and get a new lease on life. So yeah, I think it's somewhat open to interpretation. But, you know, there's other songs on the album that are upbeat sounding that are about kind of sad subjects, or, you know, the last song on the album, or one of the last songs on the album, is a kind of a medley that's about me processing my diagnosis and treatment. And so it kind of roughly follows the, you know, the stages of the five stages of grief, right? Which, you know, kind of ends with acceptance. And I think so the last bit of that medley is, you know, kind of reflects that and is a little bit more upbeat and forward thinking and positive.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. I'm guessing that's stage five, the track stage five. Yeah, I was listening to that and I noticed that partway through or halfway through the song, it does totally change the tempo. And, you know, you as a drummer, I was going to ask about the significance of that, you know, the fact that the really the tone of it and the rhythm of it and the tempo of that song changes. So is that kind of, is that a good indicator of kind of your journey, where it started off a little bit more somber and then, you know, you have a new hope, a new lease on life by the end of it?
Totally. I never thought of it strictly through tempo, but that is a good point. I think anybody who goes through that kind of diagnosis, that kind of a process, is going to have a lot of time to reflect and hopefully take something out of it. And in a lot of ways, like, you know, now that I'm, knock on wood, it's been about 4.5 years, coming up on 5 years in remission. And all my tests so far have been great, like positive, or there's no indication of the cancer coming back. So as long as that continues to be the case, it's kind of hard to not see it as a bit of a positive. You know, I was very lucky to have a form of cancer that has a very high 5-year survival rate and, you know, high rates of remission and stuff. Like my grandpa, actually, he had testicular cancer in the 1950s. So he would have been like in his 40s, I guess, and he lived to be 93. Wow. So when I hear things like that, you know, it makes me feel pretty positive. And it definitely did give me, you know, somewhat of a new outlook on life. It's not like I walk around every day with a huge smile on my face and have no problems whatsoever, but like, I don't think I would have made this album or made a album of my own material if it hadn't been for this, like if it hadn't kind of given me a real kick in the butt and made me realize it was something I wanted to do before I, you know, was out of music or, you know, passed away or whatever.
Wow. And I know that you were, I believe you were 35 when you were diagnosed around there, and your wife was pregnant, like you talked about. And I believe I read that, you know, your first goal was that you wanted to be alive for when your daughter was born. And then the next goal was to be alive long enough that she would remember you. And that really, when I was reading that, that really struck an emotional chord for me. And so how does it feel now that you've gotten to that point where you've accomplished both of those and you continue to thrive and get to see her grow up? How is that?
Yeah, totally. Like I you don't want to seem, you know, melodramatic or anything like that. But at the time, like when I first found a lump, you know, when I was just in the shower, and I didn't know if that was where the cancer started or if it had spread from somewhere else, right? Like you really don't know. And it takes a while before you can, you know, I had to basically book a surgery before they could even run a test on the tumor, right? To see, like, they don't go and
Oh.
test the tumor. So, you know, it was probably about a month before I had had the surgery, and they had ran a test and found that it was cancer. Then you get some follow-up tests where you see if it's spread, you know, to anywhere else in your body. And in my case, it had spread into a lymph node, but luckily a nearby one. So yeah, it's hard for your mind not to go to the worst case scenario, right? And I was thinking, you know, my daughter's about to be born in, you know, 5 or so months, you know, yeah. I really want to make it at least that far. And you know, now she's 4 and we have a second daughter who's about to turn 2.
Wow.
So, you know, I think that our older daughter can at least, you know, if I was to get hit by a bus or something tomorrow, she at least have some memory of me. And, you know, the younger daughter maybe takes a couple more years, but I definitely, you know, it's good to have to set small achievable goals. And,
yeah.
And once you hit them to move on to the next phase. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And what has it been like to be a dad? How has that changed your life?
It's great. I love it. I really do.
Yeah.
It's something I always knew I wanted to be a part of my life. And it, you know, it can be challenging, especially in the sheepdogs. Like, we do a lot of touring. Last year we were gone for about, we played like 90 shows.
Wow.
So it's a lot of time on the road. And you know, so that is definitely tough. It's hard on me. It's hard on them. It's hard on my wife to be taking care of them without me around. It was actually a bit of a silver lining for me personally, to the pandemic. Like in 2020, we only played 5 shows that year. And I think 2021 was maybe like 20 or something like that. So I got to spend a lot more time at home, with Lucy as she's growing up, and with Sally as she was born. So, you know, to me, that was a bit of a upside. And now it's just trying to strike the right balance between, you know, being available when I'm on the road and being the best dad I can be when I'm at home.
Do they have a grasp of what dad does?
Yeah, I think so. But I don't know if they totally appreciate how unusual it is. You know, like, they know this last weekend we went to, me and my wife went to the Junos with the rest of the sheepdogs. And, you know, they see photos of it and they think it's cool, but I don't know if they necessarily realize that the other kids in their class, their parents aren't doing similar things. So,
yeah.
But, you know, we try to really have a lot of music around in the house, like listen to a lot of music. Like, they have their own drum kit. They can play lots of different percussion instruments and like a little guitar and keyboards and stuff like that. So I don't know. I think hopefully they realize that music is a very special thing and a very, it becomes a very important part of their life as well. And maybe if that is the case, then they'll look back and think it's pretty cool their dad was able to, you know, have a career playing music. I know that's what I thought, actually, because my dad is a professional musician as well.
Okay.
Same with Ewan and Seamus. Their dad, Neil, is a musician as well. So definitely something that I could see growing up. Although, to be honest, there were times when I, you know, the classic thing where you like want to rebel against your parents and do the opposite of whatever they are doing. So even though my dad had a really cool job, you know, I wanted to do something else. I don't even know what, be a lawyer or something, just to be different, right? Different from your parents.
Just to rebel. But then I guess your parents probably always see that ability in you, right? And want you to be able to take on the things that you love. And I know that you were starting the band in your basement, with the sheepdogs, and you went out before it was even the sheepdogs, and you went to a local music store, and you know, you bought some equipment with a gift card, right? So I was wondering, you know, when you think back to the early days of you in the basement and playing with your friends and creating this music, what do you remember about that time?
Well, yeah, you're totally right about that story. You've done some good research. My dad got a gift certificate to Long McQuaid for $50 or something like that. He got that as part of like a honorarium for something he did, music related. But so he gave it to me, and it was basically happened to be the exact amount it cost to rent a crappy drum kit for a month. And so I did, and I don't think they, like, I had never played the drums before, and I don't think I don't think that they had any inkling that I wanted to play the drums. And so, but I went and got it, brought it home, figured out how to set it up. And then Ewan and Ryan came over that same afternoon and we started the band that day. Wow. And that was about coming up on 19 years ago this summer. And we've been in the band ever since.
That's amazing. One gift card changed your life.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, that and listening to a lot of Led Zeppelin, I basically just thought,
yeah,
John Bonham was like the greatest, you know, and I was just listening to a ton of Led Zeppelin. And I just thought, man, if I could play a little bit like that, that would be the greatest thing. And so I would just like be up in my room, you know, stomping on the ground and slapping my legs. And my parents, I don't think, had any idea what was going on up there. But yeah, and then I don't know, just I can't quite explain it. It just was like a drive inside me that I want to do. I played other instruments before. Like I played piano and a bit of bass. I played saxophone and school band and stuff like that. But I never really felt quite the same lure as the drums had, I guess.
Just a quick break. I'd like to thank everyone for listening or watching this episode and ask that you support the podcast by subscribing on Apple Podcasts, following on Spotify, leaving a review, subscribing on YouTube, following us on social media. Those are just a few ways that you can support and it's all free. So follow us on TikTok, Instagram, Twitter, subscribe on YouTube. The username is Here to Listen Pod. That's H-E-A-R, Here to Listen Pod, P-O-D. Now back to the show. You know, I did notice that the song He's a Man is a cover of 'Cause I'm a Man by Tame Impala. So mm-hmm. Why did you want to put that on the album?
Well, I guess I wanted a break from just everything being about my treatment. And also, one of my favorite songwriters ever is Leon Russell. I think he's one of the best songwriters ever, but his albums would always have covers on them. And a lot of those times those covers were like very imaginative or like extremely different from the original. Like it wasn't just like him singing it over the same basic track at the same tempo and stuff.
Yeah.
So, and when 'Cause I'm a Man came out, the Tame Impala track, me and my wife, we just really, really loved it and listened to it over and over again. I can still kind of remember that day pretty clearly. So it's always been kind of a special song to me. And I had the idea to replace the synth part with a pedal steel. I thought that might sound kind of cool. And then I was like, oh, and then it could be like kind of a country funky version of the song. And then when I started thinking about that, I was like, well, you know, what if it was, you know, the roles were reversed and the song was sung by a woman instead of a man?
Yeah.
And then it would have kind of like a Stand By Your Man, Tammy Wynette kind of a vibe to it. And like I said, because me and my wife really enjoyed the song, I thought, well, we're going to get her to sing it.
Yeah.
And so me and her worked on the lyrics to kind of convert them a little bit. A lot of them end up being basically the same, but a couple had to be changed to be from the woman's perspective. And, you know, she, you know, like me, would kind of sing and play instruments and stuff growing up, but now she has a regular job. And so, you know, it took a little bit of convincing, but now we made this thing that I think is really cool that we collaborated on. It's something our kids can look back on later and say like, hey, it wasn't just my dad that was in the Sheepdogs. My mom sang on this record as well.
Yeah. What was it like collaborating together and working together? Obviously you collaborate with raising your kids and probably in a lot of other ways, but what was it like to collaborate on music together with your wife?
It was good. It was pretty frictionless. Like I know she knew I had a lot more expertise in the studio and stuff like that. So she wasn't, you know, and I at the same time knew that she, because she hadn't been there a lot, that, you know, it's not like I was going to grill her and make her do like 500 takes or something like that. So I, you know, we've been together for a really long time and I think we have a pretty good understanding of each other. And I think that probably helped help us realize like, you know, how to navigate a new situation, much like having kids, right?
Which is
a new situation. Yeah.
And she's a great voice.
Thank you very much.
You'll have to pass along the compliment. I actually wrote in my notes, I was like, who's the female singer on that song, on that cover? So,
well, she'd be the first to admit she's not like Whitney Houston or something like that, but I think she's got a really cool sounding voice and I do think it suits the song very well.
Yeah. So there weren't any disagreements when you were working together on music together, you and your wife?
No, I don't think so.
It just flew.
Not
well.
That I can. Not that I can remember.
That's great. Well, I was going to ask about that because, you know, when you're working together as a band for almost 2 decades and you all are friends as well, how do you deal with disagreements?
Well, you know, depends on the situation. Like, you know, in the studio, most of the songs, nearly all the songs we're working on are written by Ewan, our lead singer, right?
Mm-hmm.
So at the end of the day, he sort of gets final say in a lot of things. Now, you know, sometimes he has a pretty clear idea of what he wants the drums to sound like or what he wants the drum part to be. And I actually don't mind that. I like kind of trying to fulfill someone else's idea.
Yeah.
But other times he, you know, just wants to kind of jam something out and see where it goes. And we have a lot of freedom to do what we feel is right. And I obviously enjoy that approach as well. You know, and then he is the, at least for our last 3 or 4 records, he has been like the producer as well. So, you know, he, like I said, he has final say, but he's not really a tyrant about that kind of stuff. At least not, I don't find him to be. I find most of his requests to be pretty reasonable. Now for the Nutana stuff, I'm the producer and, you know, That's so I guess that makes me in charge to a certain degree. And so that was something I liked doing. I liked, you know, having that role for a change. And at the same time, I think it helps or will help me, has helped, I guess, because we have recorded an album since I recorded this one. Helps me be a better member of the Sheepdogs to be able to see what the other, you know, the other side of those arguments or at least discussions is and get that kind of perspective, certainly.
Do you think that this will be, you know, a multiple album project where we're going to see more music as part of Nutana and potentially touring? Or are you going to combine it where maybe you'll perform some of the songs on tour? How will that go for fans of the album?
I would love to be, you know, I would love to record some more music. It's obviously I'm pretty busy right now with Sheepdog stuff and and releasing this album, which has proven to be a lot more work than I thought it would be, or maybe than I realized, I guess. I would love to record some more stuff, maybe record something and be able to release it a little bit quicker. So maybe that means it's like just a single song or like an EP, maybe 4 or 5 songs might be a better way to approach it, because, you know, it took a long time to make this album, you know, going from the treatment to finally getting the courage to record it. And then as soon as we recorded, the pandemic hits and then the pandemic's over and then super busy trying to catch up with the Sheepdog stuff. So it's certainly been a long process and, you know, I'd like to be able to create and release stuff a little bit quicker. As far as shows, like I wasn't sure initially if I wanted to, you know, do anything live with it, but now I'm feeling like I would like to. I'm opening up for my friend Ellen Fraze at the end of this month here. And I just had a rehearsal with my band, the band that's going to be backing me up on that show last night. And, you know, it's pretty fun. It's a pretty different thing for me to be singing and lead and playing drums or singing lead and playing keys.
Yeah.
You know, it's a definitely a new experience and a new challenge, which is obviously always a good thing to be challenging yourself. As far as like during Sheepdog sets, you know, like there's a bunch of different Sheepdog side projects. There's Bros, which is Ewan and Seamus. Ewan has a solo album. Seamus just released a solo album as well a couple weeks ago. So we have a lot of material to draw from. Sheepdog shows have up until this point been just Sheepdog songs. And I think that's probably how it'll go for a while, but you never know. Yeah.
You never know.
You never know.
Well, if you stop by Toronto with the Nutana project, I would love to see that show. I'm excited to potentially hear more. You know, the name Nutana, is that based on your roots of growing up in Saskatoon?
Yeah. For anyone who doesn't know, it's actually just a neighborhood in Saskatoon, right across the river from downtown. That's where I grew up and lived for most of my life. And I also thought it was kind of interesting. Like, I just like the way the word sounds. I think it it's appealing, I guess. But also anyone outside of Saskatoon doesn't know what it means necessarily, because it's a word original to Saskatoon. I didn't really want to release something with my name on it. I just felt a little bit weird about that. I remember reading this quote from Dallas Green from City in Color from years ago, where he just said, like, he didn't want to see his name on a t-shirt. He felt weird about that. And I can kind of relate to that. So I thought I'd use a pseudonym.
Yeah. And I almost feel like, in a way, and not everyone is like this, but I feel like for a lot of people, when you're using a different name, you maybe can even get a little bit more creative, because there's not so much pressure on who you're defined as, but this is a whole new project, a whole new name. You can kind of make it whatever you want it to be. Right.
That's a good point. Like, I probably wouldn't have been able to do like that cover with my wife singing if it had been Sam Corbett record, I guess. I also just like the idea of it being, you know, all the original songs are written by me, and I'm singing on lead on all the other tracks, but I had a lot of really great collaborators on this album. Jim Boskill, who was in the Sheepdogs and now in Blue Rodeo, Chris Mason was in the Deep Dark Woods, Clayton Lithcombe from Casey and Clayton, actually Seamus from the Sheepdogs played keys on a couple tracks. My dad played saxophone on a song.
Wow.
Talking about him earlier, former Sheepdogs guitarist Liet played on a couple songs. So I had so many great collaborators that I just thought it'd be a little bit more appropriate to have a bit of a pseudonym.
I feel like it's a perfect album going into spring and summer. A lot of it gives me like kind of a cottage. I don't know if you're going for this, but it kind of gives me that cottage summery vibe.
That's great to hear. We often joke that in the Sheepdogs, we play lake rock, you know, rock to be consumed on the dock.
Your publicist, Adam, shout out to Adam. Mm-hmm. He was telling me that April actually is Testicular Cancer Awareness Month, which I didn't know. And you're releasing this album in April. And I know you had talked about wanting to speak out when you were talking in Movember about your cancer journey, and specifically the type of cancer, because some men may feel embarrassed. Why do you think that is? Why do you think men are embarrassed to talk about testicular cancer?
Well, you know, for me, like when we first announced as the band that I had testicular cancer, we actually didn't say testicular cancer. And it was just because I felt kind of embarrassed for people to be thinking about that part of my body, I guess. But, you know, because we just said that I had to step away because I had cancer instead of testicular cancer, it actually was kind of a harmful thing, because people didn't know if I had, like, you know, stage 4 lung cancer or something that was, you know, I was, like I said, I was lucky enough to have a pretty treatable form of cancer. But, you know, I can't blame people if they thought the worst and were maybe more worried about me than they necessarily needed to be. So that was kind of a negative thing. And so I did, in 2019, I did team up with Movember to kind of talk about it, like my journey up to that point anyway, and try and destigmatize it a little bit, which I think is pretty important. You know, like, I'm the type of person, like, I've always been a bit of a hypochondriac. So as soon as I felt something, I got it checked out right away. But that's not the case for everyone. You know, some people are, you know, just, you know, not as inclined to do it, or maybe just leave it and hope it goes away. Yeah. Another part of my story is, you know, like I said, I had to leave a couple of Sheepdogs tours to get my treatment, but I didn't want to do that. And I was initially going to postpone my treatment so I could stay on the tours. I didn't want someone else playing drums with them, I guess, even though it ended up being a couple of really good friends of ours that did it.
Yeah.
It was just, I didn't want that to happen. So I was like, oh, I'll just wait and get my treatment after the tours. But I eventually, thankfully, gave my head a shake and thought, what the hell am I doing? You have to get this done as soon as possible. Like, it might not make a difference, but it definitely could.
Yeah.
So that would definitely be a message that I want to spread. And so when my album was going to come out, I messaged Movember just to see if they'd be interested in, you know, doing an update on me. And they said, yeah, this is great. It's TCAM in April. And I said, what the heck's that? And they said, Testicular Cancer Awareness Month. So I had not planned that whatsoever, but just ended up being a little bit of good fortune, I guess, good timing.
Yeah, and thank you for sharing your story here on the podcast and with Movember, and, you know, speaking to something that maybe some people would be nervous to speak about or embarrassed, because you're really helping to encourage others to take charge of their health, especially men, because I feel like a lot of men don't. maybe. Some people in their lives may say you should get that checked out, but a lot of men maybe don't, or they're putting their career ahead of their health, right? So I'm glad that you're speaking about that, and thank you for that. I did notice in your song Stage Five, you had a lyric in there where you said he called you half a man. And I wanted to, if you're comfortable with that, I'd love for you to share a little bit more about that.
Yeah, well, that's just the idea of, like, you know, so I did have surgery. So, like, to get too graphic or whatever, but I, you know, I only have one testicle now. So, you know, that actually does not really bother me that much now that it's actually true for me. Maybe I thought that that would bother me more than it actually did. Like, I basically never think about that. It doesn't matter at all. And I'm able to live my life. And I think what ends up happening is, you know, for me anyway, hormonally, it hasn't been an issue. Maybe it is for some people, but maybe that I was worried that for some people, they would perceive it that way, that I'm, you know, not as masculine as, as other men. And it sounds dumb to say that out loud, because I really don't care about that. You know, that's not what it's all about for me. But, you know, I also talk about lifetime a half a man. So that kind of just dovetailed into the idea that, like, oh, my life expectancy just went down by a whole bunch by, you know, having had cancer. Right. So that'd be like another way that I could be half a man, like have half a lifetime, you know, potentially, or, you know, if I hadn't gotten anything done, I definitely would have had half of a normal life expectancy. So it's just kind of like a bunch of kind of random thoughts that came together to be the lyrics of that song, I guess. And
yeah,
was sort of reflecting, you know, maybe a more angry time period when I was thinking about it.
Well, thanks for getting vulnerable. I'm sure there's some people out there that can relate. I mean, hopefully there's much more than half a life. I mean, look at your grandpa. You said, you know, he got through testicular cancer, and you said he lived to like 90, 95?
93, yeah.
93?
So, yeah. Wow. He smoked too, so I maybe he just had to, I don't know. He's made of the old stock where you grew up on a farm in Saskatchewan. So, yeah.
Yeah. What would be your favorite lyric that you've written on this album?
I do have, I'm not sure when this podcast is coming out, but album comes out April 7th, but there is one song available right now called You Belong on streaming, or there's a video for it. That song is not about cancer. It's just sort of about the idea of, like, imposter syndrome. I think a lot of, you know, people, successful people or whoever, I certainly know that a lot of musicians kind of suffer from that, like, basically, like, doubt your abilities and maybe don't feel like you deserve your success. I know that's something I've thought about a lot. And so that song is about, like, sort of confronting the imposter syndrome and just being proud of who you are, I guess. At least that's what the song is about for me. And, you know, again, I tried to write the lyrics a little bit on the vague side, so maybe somebody else would have a different interpretation, which is great. But I was pretty happy with how those lyrics turned out. It's interesting, like, when you put out an album to upload it to streaming services, you have to, like, write out all the lyrics, like, kind of how they're sung in the song and stuff like that. So I recently did that. And when you go through it, sometimes you think, like, wow, that's actually pretty cool. And then other times you're pretty embarrassed by what you wrote, but that's okay too. I guess if you weren't embarrassed by it, then it means you haven't grown since the time you wrote it.
I mean, it can be kind of like a journal, right? You're basically, you're writing almost as if it's journal. And I've said this in another episode, but, you know, as a musician, you're kind of releasing that journal to the world, right? For the world to see and decipher what the meanings are behind it. Sometimes it's maybe better to keep it vague, because they may assign their own meanings to it that are impactful to them. It could be totally different than what you had intended.
Yeah, my favorite lyrics are definitely like that. Like, Steely Dan is a band that I really like. And there's not maybe a ton of, like, musical influence on my album, but lyrically definitely there is, where their lyrics are definitely open to interpretation. And
yeah.
And yeah.
I have one final question for you, Sam,
Sure.
which is, I like to ask all my guests this, which is, if you had a movie or a book made about your life, what would the title of that be?
Well, that's a great question. Usually with musicians, it ends up being like the name of like one of their iconic songs or something like that. So like the Sheepdog's story would be like Feeling Good, the Sheepdog story or something like that. Or, you know, I don't know, the autobiography of Ewan Curry or something like that. So I guess you'd have to pick the name of one of the songs from my album. So I don't know, maybe You Belong would be a good one. Maybe That Would Be All, or, you know, I'll let the listener decide which one best sums it up. Maybe if I thought about it for a little longer, I could get a better answer.
I'm a fan of That Would Be All. Again, I love that song, and it sounds kind of like almost like the end of a play or something.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
For now, maybe there's a continuation of it, but That Would Be All for now. So I
let's go.
I think
yeah,
that could
let's
fit.
Go with that. That sounds like a good answer. That's a good book title. Yeah.
I would totally read that book or watch
I would
that
like
movie.
I mean, I would like to write it, the book about my life at some time, you know, maybe if I, you know, whenever we retire, which is hopefully not anytime soon. But, you know, I enjoy writing and I would love to write something, but unfortunately I can't really remember. Like I said, a bunch of the stuff that has happened. I used to write these, like blog posts for, Saskatoon kind of underground paper.
Okay.
And I was reading one of them the other day, and I was like, I couldn't believe this stuff in there. I was like, I don't remember any of this stuff. I'm glad I wrote it down. It makes me wish I'd written more. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what was there a story that stuck out to you?
Back then I was reading about, and it was kind of topical because the Junos were just happened, but I was reading a post I had written about when we played the Junos in 2014. We played a medley of BTO songs, to help induct them into the Juno Hall of Fame, or Canadian Music Hall of Fame. And it's quite the story. It was a very stressful, but ultimately very rewarding experience.
Why was it stressful?
Well, it's, you know, the performance was, you know, live on TV, but they wanted it to sync up to this video of people had sent in of them singing along to Taking Care of Business.
Okay.
But the original Taking Care of Business is not performed to a click. So they thought they would edit this version of Taking Care of Business and then, you know, had to play along to it. So they had tapped out this click. But, you know, usually a click, a metronome is like very consistent, like ta, 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 ta.
Yeah.
But this was like ta, 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 ta. Like it was like speeding up and slowing down all over the place because it was using it was editing together the different parts of the song that weren't originally played to a click. So no one was hearing it but me, and everyone else is trying to play along to me. And it was a total nightmare during rehearsal. And luckily, I can't even really believe how lucky this was, looking back on it. Right before we were about to play it on air, I just tested it out in my in-ear monitors, and it was only working on one side. And I just said, you know what, screw it, like take it out. And the guy was like, no, I'm going to leave it in. And like, no, listen to me, take it out. And this is like, it was already live on air. They're presenting an award on the other side of the arena. I was like, take it out right now. And then we started the performance, and like, big surprise, it went way better than any of the rehearsals because it didn't have this stupid click thing in it.
So it's almost like you did it from memory, like without the click, you just did it and it flowed and it matched.
Yeah. Well, the arrangement was easy enough to remember. But it was just like, I was able to listen to the band and respond to how they were playing and not try and slow them down at unnatural times and whatever. Yeah. I was very lucky. I can't even believe it. Cause I mean, it just really sucked to try and play to that uneven metronome.
Yeah.
Maybe some people can do it, but I can't. So
yeah. Well, thank you, Sam, for opening up and you know, getting vulnerable and sharing your story. And I'm so excited for everyone else to hear Nutana. And I can't wait to see what's next for you. So thanks again.
My pleasure, man. Thanks so much for having me. Like I said, out April 7th, you know, you can find me wherever on social media. It's often Nutana Band. Thanks, Ryan. Appreciate it.